Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel this morning. Interestingly enough, none of our panelists are in the studio, and I hope they're here, but I don't know exactly where. There's one of them. All right, we have one panelist now. We have two panelists.
I see two. Do I hear three?
Three. We have three panelists. All right. Well, I'm going to introduce them actually as they come in. We'll play music, and they can come on in. Joining us for the discussion, WAMC's Alan Chartok. Good morning, Alan.
Hey!
Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain back from vacation, and we couldn't be more delighted. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
And SUNY Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary R. Mayo is in the house.
Hi.
Oh, I see she moved away from me today.
How are you?
I didn't. Mike took my seat, but it's okay.
I see she moved away because she doesn't want to fool.
Oh,
because somebody said to her the other day, why don't you just slap him?
Yeah, that is tempting sometimes.
So maybe this configuration is better for everybody involved, isn't it?
Either safer that or we got to grow a long arm.
So good morning. How is everybody?
How are you, Mike? You don't look too happy.
I don't look too happy?
No,
I'm
sure?
Delighted.
No, Mike's always happy.
It's always difficult, that hard landing after you've been off on vacation.
Did you do anything fun?
Oh, yeah. We went to the beach in North Carolina, all my
whole
family.
Did you ride? Did you swim with the sharks?
The Wall Street Journal had a story a couple weeks ago that estimated that your chances while at the beach of being attacked by a shark are something like 1 in 8 million.
I was in North Carolina at the beach 3 weeks ago, and walking by the pier, my sister and a friend saw a tiger shark circling. Right.
But
within
would he
sight.
Attack you? I'm not so sure.
Well, you put it this way. You wouldn't would catch you, me in the ocean with a shark.
I was going to say, Mac, would you get in the water and test to see if it would? The Wall Street Journal says I'm safe. Splash? No.
Well, if I were a tiger shark, I wouldn't go after Rosemary either.
That's such an anti-feminist.
Well, the beach I was at, which was...
I just think she's going to beat the crap out of
it. It was kind of cool, yeah.
Tiger shark, yeah.
Somebody was attacked by a shark back in June at the beach I was at.
And
so statistically, one strike, it's like lightning striking a second time. I just thought it was very unlikely.
Well, with all of that, we have subjects to talk about, and we hope that you'll join in on the conversation. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and you can join in on our discussion. Let us go to what is happening in the world today. And there's some very interesting stories, and I'll begin with the one that has been, I sent a couple different articles on this because I thought it was just an interesting story, and that is, Donald Trump on taxes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love this story.
Okay, this is an interesting story. So the GOP is alarmed, according to the New York Times, that's the word they use, alarmed. For years, Republicans have run for office on promises of cutting taxes and bolstering business to stimulate economic growth, pledging allegiance to a Reagan-esque model of conservatism that has largely become the orthodoxy of the party. But this election cycle, the Republican presidential candidate who currently leads in most polls is taking a different approach, and it is jangling the nerves of some of the party's most traditional supporters. The tendency of that candidate, the billionaire developer Donald Trump, to make provocative headline-grabbing speeches has helped obscure an emerging set of beliefs that he would raise taxes in certain areas, particularly on corporations that he believes do not act in the best interests of the United States.
It's obviously taking a page from your candidate, Alan. This is Bernie stuff.
Well, you know, the thing about this guy, Rosemary, is that he's so unpredictable, Trump. And there is a number of companion ideas that go with this, which is tax the hell out of people who have offshore businesses, tax the hell out of people who are trying to combine businesses in order to get tax breaks and move abroad. So it isn't only raising taxes, it's raising taxes selectively also among the people who are very unpopular in this country by a lot of people. This is not the first guy to ever say, let's start taxing offshore people who are setting businesses up, but somehow it never gets done, mainly because, as Joe just indicated, the Republican orthodoxy is we don't screw our friends.
Well, he claims that he has many friends who are hedge fund hedge fund managers. Yeah. And hedge fund managers pay somewhat less tax than most other people.
That's wrong.
And, you know, he has said that he would, he's called hedge fund managers paper pushers who tend to get lucky on the road to riches with other people's money. And he's talking about increasing their taxes to something more like 30%, which is what most people pay, rather than 15 to 20%.
Certainly is what I pay.
Mitt Romney took advantage of this. He had it. His capital gains was under the same sort of indirect capital.
Right. Bain Capital's retirement plan was based on that, and he was only paying 15% taxes.
Correct.
While everybody else was paying twice that. And that really hurt him in the election. And Trump would close that. But it's also interesting that Trump and Jeb Bush are the only two Republicans who haven't signed the pact that Grover Norquist, you know, and his organization, you know, Americans Against Taxes or some name like that, and they have not signed on. So people are pressuring. Norquist says he's hoping that Trump will sign it and that Bush will sign it, but he's playing that one. He's a populist. And you're right, he's inconsistent. He's all over the place. So people who don't like his stance on immigration might say, but that's a good idea about taxes, and they might rationalize voting for him, perhaps.
But sure. Is this just another thing that the party doesn't know what to do with him about, and it just adds to the list and makes him all the more attractive to other Republicans who may vote
for
him?
Tea Party did this, too. The Tea Party made the Republican Party as much its enemy as Democrats, and Trump is right in there with them. I think you hit on the right thing, Alan, that he's finding all the unpopular targets and going right after.
There's another thing that's going
immigrant hedge funds. Yeah, go ahead.
There's another thing that's going on here, and we're all seeing it, and that is the people seem to have lost faith in the regular politicians, especially on the Republican side. They don't like so all of a sudden we're seeing a poll, which I know that Joe's going to bring up in the show, in which Dr. Carson is tied with Trump now in Iowa. That's extraordinary. They want somebody from the outside to run. Who's the last one we know? Was it Eisenhower?
Who was an outsider?
Yeah, sort of.
Being elected, yeah, I guess so. He came from the military. He was a national leader, but he had not been in politics.
He did have to win World War II, but that was another story.
But he had not been in politics. In fact, there was some question in 1952 whether he would go with the Republican or the Democratic Party. And he went with the Republicans as a move to bolster the two-party system, it's been written. So, but since then, everyone else has been a career politician, and that's part of the Carly Fiorina is coming up in the polls. When you look at Carson, Trump, and Fiorina's numbers, it adds up to about half almost of what Republicans in Iowa are saying they want. So it is a rejection of the mainstream politicians and the sound bites and the pollsters telling them what to say and et cetera, et cetera.
But again, it's such a small part and such an isolated part of the country. These are the same people who don't believe in evolution. It's just really hard for me
That's part of the problem. Yeah. The system is based on small pockets of not, that are not fully representative of the nation. Really winnowing out who's in the race and who's not going to be.
I have two next door neighbors, wonderful people, the Norrises, who he hails from, I guess.
One of those Midland states.
Yeah, I was thinking Iowa, but it's not.
One of those ice states.
Marshalltown. Okay. Oh, anyway, Iowa, I think. So anyway,
this is like the Steinberg picture on the front of the New Yorker.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the point is, he comes from one of those states. And he does believe in evolution. Believe me, he believes in evolution. I say that, Rosemary, because we always get into trouble when you say these people don't believe in evolution. And then we hear from all the people from the state who do believe in evolution. So we have to be careful about drawing large picture.
The polls we're pointing are what, like a one-third to you're combining people so you come up with a half, which is impressive, but also phony. We are continuing the idea that this is serious. I am not convinced of that.
Okay, I'm sorry, Mike.
What's not serious?
That his bid, Trump's bid for the presidency is serious.
But to the larger point, I think that was being made this morning, which I find interesting, is that the outsider idea. So you have, whether it be Ben Carson or Fiorina, or it be Donald Trump. That says something, doesn't it? I mean, all
haven't
of the people,
we always had that? I mean, wasn't that even in our last election too? Obama was the outsider because he hadn't been inside very long.
Yeah, that's true. He was more popular because he hadn't made a lot of mistakes. I'm sure if you poll the people in depth.
But he also won.
Yes, he did win.
Because we go for this idea that we don't want experience, we want outsiders, we want the inexperienced.
Fresh points of view, fresh, new ideas. Yeah, yeah. But Ben Carson, who knows anything about what he stands for?
So, I want experience and smart, okay? What's wrong with that?
Well, Donald Trump made billions. That's what his appeal is to some people.
So I'm curious to how you feel, and Alan, I mean, so what does that say about the candidacy now of if you're Chris Christie, if you're Jeb Bush, if you're Marco Rubio, if you're Ted Cruz, Scott Walker, John Kasich, any of the people who said, oh, at one point had a legitimate shot.
Right.
Well, are they done?
Yes. Most of them are done.
I mean, do you
think most of them are done anyway?
But do you think Jeb Bush is done?
Yes, he's at 5% in the polls.
So you don't think he can
in the Iowa poll? He's 5%.
He can't
where
turn
was
around.
John McCain at this point in 2008?
No, I do not think Jeb Bush is done.
No, I don't think he's done.
Well, 5% in a major initial primary election—that's pretty low.
The whole idea of primaries and the whole importance of getting an initial vote is definitely different.
Okay.
Trump can lose every one of them, and he'd still be the strongest candidate. And he doesn't need those votes anymore.
Okay,
he's got money.
Let me just do something that is uncharacteristic for me. I was wrong.
No.
I was wrong. You're right. And I was wrong.
And
the fact of the matter is, Bush is not done. He's collected immense amounts of money from the usual suspects. They put themselves behind him. They've got to go through all of these primaries, and then the delegates have got to go to a convention. And if they're angry enough about Trump, they might not do what all of those votes add up to. So I would say that Bush still remains a leading contender. Now, apparently, Chris Christie is going on television, or just went on television, says he's going to change his you know, way of being, and he's really going on the attack now. And him, I would say, he's not going to be president. And
now,
I think
he was on Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah,
last
that's
night.
The one
that's
I was thinking.
That's how he's reaching his audience. But and Jimmy Fallon said, "I thought that the crazy guy who was screaming at everybody was going to be you, and it's Donald Trump." You know.
And he said.
And well, he acknowledged that.
Yeah. Well, that's right. So I think ever since the George Washington Bridge was built, Christie has been done.
Bridgegate, yeah, that's haunting him.
So,
little joke.
At this time in 2008, here's what the polls showed. Mike Huckabee had 29%.
At this point?
At this point. Mitt Romney, this is the, I think it's Zogby, but I'm not, no, I'm sorry, it's the CNN poll. 29% for 29.7% for Huckabee. Romney had 26%. McCain had 11.8%.
Thompson
had 11.7%.
Wow.
Paul had 7.3%, and Giuliani had 6%.
Who had got the nomination?
In 2008.
Oh, 2008.
McCain.
And the difference, of course, is that in 2010, we have Citizens United. So the whole financing of campaigns have changed. You used to have to win those early campaigns, early primaries,
in order to
get money. You do not need to do that anymore.
Right.
So
you can sit back. You don't have to let the people of Iowa determine your outcome as long as you have a bankroll like Jeb Bush does.
Right.
And that's why you're right
and
now.
And Scott Walker has Coke money. He doesn't care.
Well, The interesting thing here is that Bush is not doing, as I just tried to say, is not doing that well in the polls. And Bush has, I think, a lot of money from the usual suspects. So money doesn't always mean that you're going to win. Money doesn't always mean you're going to win.
But you're talking winning the Iowa primary. We're talking winning the nomination.
No,
two different, totally different things.
Actually, I'm thinking, Rosemary, of everything. I'm thinking of the Iowa primary, but I'm thinking of everything else. Even though he has all of this money, can put it into television, can put it into ads, sometimes you don't catch fire. And I think that's
right. I agree. I think you're making a good point. Money will mitigate a loss in Iowa's caucuses, sure. But it won't automatically resolve it. You need to have some momentum, and that's what Obama had back in 2008. He had momentum that kind of clobbered Hillary, who was expected to get it all.
Now, Obama had something that Dr. Carson has also. He was a blank slate. And a lot of people projected their own needs and desires and political views into this guy. They knew all about Hillary. She had been all over the place. But I do think that what happens, I think I got a rise out of Rosemary here. I saw her
shaking her head.
So, but I do.
Obama didn't go around saying crazy stuff. Carson's nuts. And that's kind of a negative.
Well, where do you
I don't
get
think that many
from?
People are aware how nutty he is.
Right.
And the things
and
he's
gonna
said
get.
About Americans being like Nazis and some of that'll come out. But right now, you're right, Alan. He's a blank slate. And people like what they know about him because they don't know much about him.
So aren't you then just supporting my view that these polls mean very little right now?
Well, they mean something.
They can derail somebody if they're not getting any demand.
Absolutely.
They're the basis of many morning radio talk shows.
Will George Pataki take his campaign into other states if he gets 1%, less than 1%
We can keep talking about sharks if you want.
I thought we were.
Yeah, there you go. Great
so the latest poll, and we'll have to break early because we missed our first break. So it's Donald Trump, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, Scott Walker. This is in order: Carly Fiorina, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, Mike Huckabee, Rand Paul, Bobby Jindal. So which of those names could be the nominee? If you say it doesn't matter.
I still think the contenders are Jeb Bush, Rubio.
Rubio's going to be a VP, I think. That's what I think, but that's just my opinion. I think that Scott Walker's still a strong contender in there.
Number four in this list. Alan, no neck.
I have no neck.
All right.
Who knows?
We're gonna take a break. Right. We're going to catch up with some business, and we'll be back after the news. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Let me introduce the group to you. Alan Chartok is here, Mike Spain, and Rosemary Armeo all make up the panel. I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We had a very spirited conversation in the first half of the show about the 2016 presidential election, primarily the GOP primary, and we have many letters about that, and we go over to Alan now to share those letters.
Good, good. Thank you, Joe. Jill says, Bush and Bernie. I have a comment and a question. Comment. It's still 1 year and 2 months away from the elections. At this early stage, I would not count Bush or anyone else out until the primaries and caucuses actually get going. Question. Why is Bernie considered an outsider? Don't get me wrong. I love, in capital letters, Bernie. But he's a senator, a politician. Aren't outsiders those who were not and have not been politicians? I'll answer that one. I'll go first. Bernie is what we call an outside politician. In other words, he's a politician, all right, but he certainly isn't the standard stripe. Anybody else on that one?
Well, he's an independent. He sits with the Democratic caucus, but he was elected as an independent.
As an independent.
He's a self-avowed socialist. That's pretty outside the American system.
Right. No, that's right.
Well, the
And
just to the first point about the election being over a year away, the voting will take place in 5 months.
The first primary.
So yes, the general election is a ways off, but we still have to get a primary system to go through, and that begins in 5 months, which is not really all that much time.
I'm wondering when a Republican is going to officially drop out. You know, some are off the radar, but I wonder when that's going to begin.
I was watching in the, because this road to the White House on C-SPAN is now like my Bible. So, in talking about, and on that, they were saying this CNN debate is in September 16th or whatever, and they were thinking that after that, sort of see how things go after that, and then you would see a couple candidates shake out after that. I don't know if that's true.
They'll start brokering deals to endorse other candidates. Right. That'll give them some standing and whatever. Yeah.
Dear folks, says Pete from Toland, what Trump is really threatening in this electoral circus is the role of the press as ringmaster. The deciders decide who's going to be president, then pass the info to the press to be disseminated to the lumpen populace. Trump is outing the sheer venality of the press. That is what cannot be countenanced, and thus the pushback from the media.
Blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
This, you hear this every election cycle. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The press is to blame. That takes
comments.
Care of the problem. Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, Rosemary, obviously.
I didn't welcome that one. I'm sorry.
Okay. And here is from Glenn. Donald Trump inherited $250 million from his father. If he invested it then in the S&P 500, it would be worth $20 billion today. Instead, he invested in using his smarts. Now he's worth $48 billion, maybe. That doesn't sound too business savvy to me, and that would be disastrous if translated into national economics. Tom checks in this morning, who says, if you're Chris Christie, you're still hungry. Anybody get that one?
I assume it's a fat joke, which seems kind of unfair, but okay.
All right. Let's see. This is from somebody. Jack. No, J and K. Okay. Here it goes. Dear friends, I have read the news regarding a man shooting his daughter while cleaning his gun. I would think that a gun should be on safety and not loaded in capital letters while it is being cleaned. That's a no-brainer. The problem of guns in America is unbelievable. All right. And then Robert says, panel, I'm really looking forward to the pleasure of watching the other Republican candidates respond to Trump's tax proposals. Save the carried interest exemption has a nice ring to it, don't you think?
Yes. What does it mean? I mean, most people probably don't understand.
Yeah, well,
what it
means that
hedge fund managers would have to pay the full amount instead of a fraction.
Right.
Yeah.
There were three pieces of archival tape that came out over the weekend that I thought made the rounds on both the Sunday shows, but also on Facebook and social media. And that was one was the Oprah clip. Did you see this? Where
no, I didn't
president,
see it.
Where Donald Trump was on the Oprah Winfrey show in the 80s, and I think it was when the Art of the Deal, the book, came out, and he was being interviewed by Oprah Winfrey.
It was on the cover of Time then.
I'm not even sure that show was nationally syndicated at that point. But anyway. And he was talking about how he wants to run for president, and he went off on what his issues would be. They're the same issues. The exact same issues. Nothing has changed. You could take a verbatim for what he said, and it would be the same platform that he's running on now, which I found really, really fascinating.
He was a Democrat then, wasn't he? So a few things have changed.
No,
he has
supported Democrats, but he was supporting Republicans. He was playing it very, saying, you know, of all the candidates, both Democrat and Republicans, I think they're both
good
guys.
Well, in 88, he was at the Republican National Convention in New Orleans, one where George
That's
Herbert
right.
Walker Bush was nominated. He was making the rounds. I covered that for the Times Union, and he was making the rounds to the New York delegates and all over, and he was very popular. So he'd been identified as a Republican supporter. Back then,
The other one was the Letterman clip where he was talking about China, and then Letterman brought out all of his clothing line from
Macy's.
Macy's that had been made in China.
China.
And the final clip was the one where the president took him apart at the correspondents' dinner in 2000.
I thought he was done then.
That was great. I mean, that was
Donald Trump is here still.
So you like this one, Rosemary. Job Conco says, Rosemary is brilliant and speaks the truth. Okay. And
please send a copy of that to me.
And too late.
Do that right now.
It's deleted already. Oh, you can do
it.
I'll send it.
Yeah, I'll send it.
And
she can frame it.
And Stephen from Lee says, why does everyone vote for the one who raises the most money? I like the one who spends the least and knows how to budget the best. Okay, who's that? Which one is that? That's a press release.
You're pretty hot on that delete key, Alan.
Yeah, that's what the problem is. Sometimes I delete a little too fast. Who is playing the great clip you aired at 9:30?
WAMC.org.
Yeah, go WAMC.org and you'll see. And then you'll see, boy, a lot of press releases this morning. Armeo, says Ken, quote, outside the American system? Bernie got 72% of the vote in his Senate run and kicked a billionaire's butt in the previous Senate victory.
Socialist. Very outside the American system. Apparently there's a lot of them in Vermont.
So, some people even kid around and say the People's Republic of Vermont. But I'm not one of those people.
I mean, Obama, just at the accusation of being a socialist, has run into all kinds of flack, shall we say, and Bernie proclaims it.
Well, nobody is claiming Bernie wasn't born in Brooklyn.
Right, yeah. Right.
And Dawn says, how about the Pope's statement about abortion and forgiveness?
Yeah, great. Okay, right. Are we going to get to that?
Yeah, maybe? We will get to that, yeah.
And just... Michael says, how is Trump so smart? As a previous writer noted, he inherited $250 million from his father. He also filed for bankruptcy three times. And I see.
It's part of the American way. That's okay. How a billionaire gets to be a billionaire. I mean, many, many billionaires have had failed business ventures, you know.
The ups and downs of doing business.
Exactly.
Okay, I thought I read it right, but Cliff says I didn't read it right. I'm always willing. Sorry, correction. That should have read 4 to 8 billion for Trump's network, not 48 billion.
I think that may have been his error.
Yeah, yes. I think it may have been. Yeah. Now my statement actually makes sense. So he's apologizing. That's good. That's good. And correct. Okay, so then Michael says, you recently asked New York State Comptroller, Mr. DiNapoli, why your personal investment portfolio did not mimic the stock market average. Actually, I don't want to read the whole thing, but what I said to him was, it's interesting to me that when the stock market goes down, your net worth decreases, obviously. But when it goes up again, sometimes your net worth doesn't get up to where it was, even though the stock market is in mm-hmm. the same place. He answers, well, it's because of the, you know, your stockbroker and they take commissions and this and that. But I happen to belong to a wonderful thing called Tia Cref, and they don't do that. So I just wanted to answer that, if you don't mind. And Jerome says, not tax the hell out of, just that they should pay their fair share. People of every political persuasion can agree on this. Maybe not. And because it hasn't happened.
I do. I think that is a point. You know,
which
Trump makes the point that American corporations are not doing their fair share in this economy. The idea of inversions, that which you
mentioned. Yeah, but somehow the Congress doesn't change it, is my point.
Oh, true.
Yeah, and that's for a reason, because
true.
That's where they're
okay.
getting the money from. And
sure.
That's where they want to run from, and it runs counter to the American instinct that those who have the most are good and those who have the least are losers. This is not Alan speaking, ladies and gentlemen. This is a characterization of what people say and why people almost always respect the great royalty of wealth in this country. Morning panel regarding Scott Walker suggests that we may need a wall on the Canadian border. With increasing global warming, Canada will be the place to reside. Perhaps they will build a wall to keep us out. Rosemary versus the shark, says Brendan. I can see the headline now, Tiger Shark attacks Albany journalism professor. Against all odds, shark manages to escape with only minor wounds.
Okay, you could send me that one, too.
Okay, I'll
That'll
send
scare
that.
My students.
All right.
There are many more, so go ahead.
All right, how many?
I don't know.
How many more could there be?
well, the problem is everything gets mixed in here.
Okay, because
you know?
we've only gotten to one subject.
Yeah, okay.
And I want there's a couple more I'd sure. like to get to, and then we have a break, and then we're done. So the one story, let's do this, which is...
Like Chris Christie.
What?
Done.
Oh. The High Court on Monday rejected Rowan County Clerk Kim Davis's request based on religious objections to same-sex mm-hmm. marriage that she continue to be excused from issuing marriage licenses. On Tuesday, this morning, she refused to issue any marriage licenses.
She's totally enjoying the stage. She's out there locking herself in her office and then sweeping out and saying, oh, you're going to have a long day if you're waiting for me to give you a license.
So let's get this straight. The Supreme Court
right.
refused to take it, letting a lower court decision
which
stand.
Which is you got to do.
Right. She has lost.
And she's saying, I'm not doing it.
She said, God's authority allows me to break
now,
the
minute.
Law.
What you have here is a public employee who's refusing to carry out their duty. They should simply be fired
she
for
cause.
She
can't be fired. She's elected.
Well, she should be removed from office for cause. She should be
that would require
impeached.
The people who support her to do that. Right. It's a problem. If she had a boss, yeah, she'd be out on her ear. It's really dangerous. It's saying we don't believe in the Supreme Court anymore.
It's like
right.
What if
she doesn't want black people to sit in the front of the bus? Should she
What if she didn't want George W. to be president?
Right.
We only went along with that because the Supreme Court said we had to. When you lose, you obey.
Yeah, that's part of our Constitution.
Well, you mean, Rosemary, when you lose, you should obey.
Well,
because she's not
doing
it. And
up until now, Alan, we yeah. really have in this country. There has been allegiance and fealty to the rule of the Supreme Court. That's yeah. what rule of law is.
FDR lost. I mean, many battles have happened, and we've accepted it.
Right. I think this is treasonous. I actually do.
I do, too. Ooh. I think you're right.
She's I'll go along with you. Three for treason.
Okay. Three for treason, Joe.
Okay. I will make the note, and thank you very much. Yes.
What do you think you're treasonous?
Let me take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about other topics, because we have many to get to. Roundtable at WAMC.org. If you want in, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
Support comes from Saratoga Jewish Community Arts, presenting the film Slim Peace, a program encompassing nutrition, body image, and tolerance among Israeli and Palestinian women. Sunday, September 20th, 7 p.m. at Temple Sinai. Reception to follow. SaratogaSinai.org. Bedard Brothers Cheshire, featuring 7 brands in 1 location, Chevrolet, Honda, Volvo, Chrysler, Jeep, Dodge, and Ram, plus late model pre-owned cars and trucks. It's hard to beat Bedard. Online, BedardBrothers.com. And Adams Fairacre Farms, Poughkeepsie, Kingston, Newburgh, and Wappinger. Local Hudson Valley apples and vegetables. Adams Grown Mums and more. AdamsFarms.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And about 10 minutes left, and we'll try to get to as many topics as we can in that period of time. Pope Francis has said Catholic priests will be allowed to forgive women who have had abortions and doctors who carry out the procedure. In Catholicism, of course, abortion is viewed as such a grave sin that it warrants automatic excommunication.
But they have to be really sorry.
Well, I think this demonstrates what the pontiff, Pope Francis, has been trying to generate, and that is a sense of mercy and compassion
right.
for people. And if a Catholic woman who's had an abortion is truly sorry and asks for forgiveness, that used to be something that a higher-up had to approve, but now he's giving the pastoral authority to priests, which I think spreads the authority to the level where it's mercy is meted out to the members of the church. So, I mean, it doesn't change church teaching on abortion. It just shows that this is a compassionate Pope, who he said he's well aware of the pressure that has led women to this decision, and he knows that it's an existential and moral decision. And when they have made this decision to have an abortion and later on regret that and are sincerely sorry, he's giving them an avenue to come back to the church.
So my one question about this, which I don't quite understand, is he said, "I've decided, notwithstanding anything to the contrary, to allow priests for the Jubilee year absolve of a sin and abortion," which goes from December 8th to November 26, 2016. So this is temporary?
It could be like a tax-free weekend.
It does sound like an amnesty at your library, you know? Yeah. I mean, it just sounds weird.
It is unusual. I've never heard of something like this. I'm not sure that there haven't been lots of others over the centuries.
Well, but the income tax, people do it all the time. They give you an amnesty, get your stuff done.
Yeah, but we're not talking about owing anything. We're talking about the forgiveness of a sin.
Right. I would expect that if this was something that caught on, that was widely received and well received, that it could be extended. You know, that I guess the
and
question
maybe
is.
Add, let me. Yeah. I'm sorry, yeah. Mike. Mm-hmm. But let me just quickly add of what the church considers a sin.
Of what the church considers
yeah.
a sin,
yeah.
because
yeah.
often that's in contrast with what general society regards as yes. being immoral.
A whole lot of what Pope Francis does is just words, and words are important. So I applaud this. I thought you gave a really good analysis, Mike. But the bottom line, if you want to be really parse what he said, is that you have a year to get really sorry and confess your sin.
Oh, I didn't read it that way, but that's all right. You know, we may disagree. I think that he's opening the door, and these liturgical years and these special years that the church has all the time for different things, he's using this as an event to open and extend mercy to people who are asking for forgiveness for what the church does regard as a serious sin, and that
well,
is abortion.
And yeah. Right, and talking about excommunication and not having
any recourse right.
and not having any relationship with the church because of having an abortion now being welcomed into into the
That's a pretty that's substantial. I think it's consistent with what message he has been giving since he became pope. You know, it's a
who am I to judge?
Yes. All right. Who am I to judge? It didn't mean the church was now changing its stance on homosexuals, but he did say if a person is gay and they are faithful and they are living and living in the church rules, that who is he to judge? You know, and he's pushing open these doors gradually. He's artful as a politician. He's got a lot to push against, and you know, it's an evolutionary process, and it's amazing to witness as a Catholic to see all this happening.
Let's move on to another subject. We go to what else? Well, there's a lot of letters on this, so let's go to the letters on what is happening in with the Pope. I see some letters there.
Give me a name, and I'll read it. Go ahead.
There's one from Bonnie.
Bonnie. I don't see Bonnie here.
Okay. That's all right. We'll go on to another topic then, and we can find that, and we'll...
Oh, there's Bonnie.
There you go.
While he's at it, why not forgive, in quotes, Mary for a pregnancy not achieved via her husband? I thought I liked this pope, but he's quickly wearing thin. I don't know. That's from Bonnie. I like this pope a lot. I think he's terrific.
I do too. I think a lot of what he's doing is words. He cannot and does not want to change church policy.
Well, and as you
theology.
Said, words are important. I mean,
words are very important.
I think to bring people back. Yes,
right.
It is a very, you know,
a slow moving process.
Yeah, a very slow moving process. Okay, so let's go to other.
Well, one thing John says and Jeannie says, most U.S. dioceses already delegate to priests the authority to forgive sin of abortion and remove the censure of excommunication. This act simply makes the ability universal to all priests globally for the year of mercy, regardless of the policy of each particular diocese. And Terry says, hi, my feeling is the state of Kentucky should appoint a second clerk, maybe at a nearby but separate location, to issue licenses if this clerk continues to resist the decision.
They should get rid of this woman. She's basically treasonous. She's violating her oath of office. She should be taken out of office.
And she makes a point that you can easily drive to another clerk around her.
That's like saying, we don't want black people in my diner. There's
go
a diner
door.
Across the street.
Right.
Well, I don't. We have other things to talk about, or do you want to?
No,
or do you want to stay with the
Joe,
letters?
The great thing about this show is that you're the boss. You tell us where to go, we go.
All right, let's go to. We're going to stay somewhat on topic. Let's go to contraception. Employers do not need to provide insurance coverage for contraception, even if their objections are moral rather than religious. A federal judge ruled on Monday in Washington. The case concerned a group called March for Life, which was formed after the Supreme Court recognized a constitutional right to abortion in 1973 in Roe versus Wade. The group, Monday's decision said, is a nonprofit, non-religious, pro-life organization.
This is another attack on Obamacare. It's very convoluted. It is just like the last one, and I think it's going to end up in the Supreme Court and be rejected. That's my prediction.
Interesting. Yeah. So as I understand the case, correct me if I'm wrong, Joe. If you're religious, you have a right to refuse. If you're moral, now, according to this judge, you have a right to refuse. In other words,
if you're a humanist, if you're agnostic and a humanist, and you find abortion to be against your philosophy and your moral fiber, you can deny your employees access to birth control.
Which means Rosemary is essentially correct that it is an attack on
abortion. This suit was not brought by employers who have to pay out. It was brought by people who are in a health insurance plan saying, it offends me that the health plan I'm on will allow others, not me because I don't believe in it, but others to have birth control. Unbelievable. And the judge went along with it. This is clearly just another attack.
You could look at it another way. It broadens the basis from just being a religious exemption to being a personal exemption. And it recognizes that you don't have to have it based in your faith. It could just be based in your own personal beliefs.
Well, that really would be something. We can have a personal objection to laws. I don't believe in stopping at red lights, so I'm going to stop today. I'm morally turned off.
It's morally offensive for me to have to stop my car as I'm heading down Central Avenue.
Right.
So next up, Supreme Court.
I think it's going to go to the Supreme Court. Yeah.
Let's see. And then finally, we will quickly talk about what we... Well, actually, let's hold that for... Let's hold that for another time, because the migrant issue is huge, and I don't want to give that short shrift, and we only have about 2 minutes.
Well, I'll read another letter about Rosemary. Rosemary, you are the best, says Michael.
I have a son, Michael. I wonder if
you
it's
are
his son.
Quite. Does the governor of the state, says John, have the power to remove her? She sets a terrible precedent if officials decide not to obey the law. Society collapses.
Treason, yes.
Is there a way, says Denise, to force the Kentucky County Clerk to do her duty or be jailed?
Yeah, she faces contempt of court charges if she doesn't honor her requirement.
Yeah? Yeah. And if they put her in jail, then what happens?
She becomes a martyr to her cause.
She's a martyr to her cause, and whoever is her designated deputy in her absence would probably start giving marriage lessons.
Then, says Denise, her deputy, and so on, until someone is willing to do their sworn duty.
Why does she refuse to give gun permits out because she was morally opposed to guns?
Yeah.
Same thing.
Mark says, Rosemary is my favorite on the round table. She's always right on.
I just talk loud.
Right on the issues.
She's very good. She's very good, but she's not always right.
But she's right on.
I think we should have another topic.
We're out of time.
We're done. We have to go home?
Yeah, you got to go home. You can come back tomorrow.
Okay.
All right.
We never know.
Unless there's a meeting, you're coming back tomorrow.
Or a class.
That's right. Many thanks to Alan and Mike and Rosemary for being a part of the program this morning. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be back after this.